people, welcome back to another episode of Where My Killer Tape At. Once again with the brother Zeebo. Peace, brother. How you doing?
Yo, peace, girl. Yo, everything's lovely, man. Can't complain. Glad to be back, man. I'm always appreciative that you let me, let me speak on your platform, brother. So I'm glad to be
back. And let me just say this, Zeebo. Shout out to you because really these episodes are happening because of you. Because the new job is kicking my butt. So I need somebody to be like, yo, like we got to do this. And this is like, because we're late with this one.
Yeah, for sure. But we're on time.
It's my fault. It's not your fault at all, party people. It's my fault. Because Zeebo has been getting on me about it for like weeks. So we're going to be kind of like going over Ice Cube's. I want to say it's the second album. Because I know like Kill At Will was the EP.
Right.
You know, so his second solo album, Death Certificate, which as of October 31st, and I know we're a couple of weeks late, is 30 years old. Right,
that's wild to think about, man.
It is, and it's funny because for some reason I thought it was 25. I don't know why, because you told me 30. I thought it was then when I looked it up. I was like, whoa, wait a second.
Where's the time gone, man?
Where's the time gone? And there's a lot of context that we have to get into before we kind of like get into the album,
right?
Because I know, you know, and it's funny because like, you know, I joke with my kids a lot because there was a Boondocks episode where.
Talking about Ice Cube.
Ice Cube, the guy that was on the Disney Channel.
The guy that makes family movies.
Yeah, and it was just like, wow. They always bring, every time I bring up Ice Cube, they always bring that up. And I'm like.
Same thing with my daughter. You know, he's the Are We There Yet guy.
And he makes dope movies. Don't get me wrong. He makes dope movies. Shout out to him.
Yeah, for sure.
But I think what's important was, I think his career would have ended if he had stayed with NWA, right?
I'm not going to disagree with that.
And he, because he made that decision, and that decision put him on the trajectory that really made him more successful than the other members of NWA.
Yeah.
And he was able to create his own, like, path and other people on. And I think, like, that, I thought that, looking back, I was like, that decision was important. The reason why I wanted to go back to that point was because I couldn't remember who shot first. So when he left NWA, right?
Okay.
So, because No Vaseline is on this album. It wasn't
correct.
On.
Right.
It wasn't on Kill At Will. It wasn't on America's Most Wanted. There was some shots thrown. Like, there was a little here and there. But I can't remember. Was it an interview or was it a song?
The only thing record-wise that I know Ice Cube did before No Vaseline was at the end of Jacking for Beats, when he says, "I had your marks 100 miles and running," right? Because before that, you know, 100 miles and running, you know, like I said, that's when NWA started kind of talking greasy on that EP. Shout out to the EP back in the day too, because it was EPs were actually very important to your career back then. They were kind of like the mixtape before the mixtape. You know what I mean?
I agree. It was because it was usually five songs, you know what I mean, that wasn't heard before. One or two might have been a remix.
Remix, yep.
And they'll put it on there and you will copy. And they were usually dope. They were like, they whet your appetite in between albums.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So now when I say EP, people are like, what are you talking about? You know, and it's just like,
for those that know, EP stands for extended play, meaning like extended play of what were singles back then.
Exactly.
you know what I mean? So, but yeah, NWA shot first, you know, with the talks on 100 miles and running, then Ice Cube. And Ice Cube had just had that one line. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that
one line. That was it.
Which you know, again, that song Jacket for Beats was kind of like how back then a lot of MCs were like, "Oh, you whack." A lot of MCs would be like, "Oh, you whack MC." So they're like referring to like all whack MCs, not just a particular.
Right.
Individual, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Trash is trash, buddy. Don't matter where you're from.
Exactly. So, but I know there was a lot of animosity. You know, there was a lot of, as shown in the movie where they had that fight at that one hip hop seminar.
Right.
You know
right.
what I'm saying? So there was a lot of like animosity. And I'm not going to go into No Vaseline, but anyway, we're going to go to No Vaseline when we go up on it. But
for sure.
What I wanted to say was,
those are important points though. Before the album. Absolutely.
You know, he leaves NWA. He comes out with America's Most Wanted.
Dopeness.
Which was fucking dope. right?
I always tell people, like, yo, man, all there was Fear of a Black Planet with a different headlining MC. You know what I'm saying?
I'm glad you said that. I'm glad you said that. Because so he leaves NWA, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's accepted by Chuck D and the Bomb Squad.
Mm-hmm.
The Bomb Squad are like, yo, we fucking with you. He appears on that Burn Hollywood Burn with,
work with Kane.
Public Enemy. It came, right? Yep. So I was like, oh shit, I remember that. And I remember he still had his Jerry Curl. Right? Yep. Had his Jerry Curl to Kill at Will.
Yep.
And then Death Certificate, he chops the Jerry Curl.
It's gone.
It's gone. And everybody's like, oh, full. At that point, everybody's like, yeah, we all fucking with Ice. Because what I want to point out, there's a lot of revisionist history.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people on the East did not like NWA. And I want people to know that. There's a lot of people that walk around today that say, yo, I fucked with them. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no. A lot of us did not fuck with NWA, you know. And when I say East, I mean like Northeast, like New York, New Jersey, Philly. Yeah. Like we was like, uh-huh. We don't fuck with them dudes. Them Jerry Curl shit, that gang shit. We don't do none of that shit. Like,
right.
We didn't really fuck with them. And it wasn't until Public Enemy and EPMD and NWA went on that tour and they started appearing in everybody's videos. Mm-hmm. So NWA was in Public Enemy's video. They were in EPMD's video. And then when Ice Cube leaves and he's embraced by the Bomb Squad,
it's officially on.
And then him cutting off the Jerry Curl for the cover of Death Certificate was
very, very significant.
Very significant. Yeah. I cannot emphasize that much, you know. And then the Nation of Islam plays a prominent role. If you have bought the album, you can see them in the insert.
Right.
And Khalid Muhammad shows up on a lot of joints on the late great Khalid Muhammad, by the way.
Khalid Abdul Muhammad, sure.
So I think all of those things are important because a lot of people were doing it at that time. They had the Nation of Islam and they stuff. They had Farrakhan on their stuff. Like that was something that a lot of artists were doing.
Shout out to X-Clan.
There you go. Then you see Ice Cube do go from, you know, NWA to this person that we know and we see in Death Certificate. So, and I think that was crucial. And then again, back then we had cassettes and LPs. So you had the side and then the birth side. So,
right, yeah.
We're going to start, of course, with... And, you know, I just want to give that all into context. There was a lot going... You know, Ronnie King had just happened, meaning...
I was going to say, like, yeah, before you even get into the album, like, there was a lot going on in the world.
Yes.
Like before all that shit happened. Like, just March of 91 alone was both Rodney King and Latasha Harlins. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, all in the same month.
And Bush One was the president.
Boom, yeah. Yes. Desert Storm is popping off and all that other shit.
Desert Storm is popping up, yep.
Yeah, and as a kid, I remember, keep in mind, I'm either 10 or about to turn 10 around when this happens. And at the time, we were living in San Antonio, Texas.
Oh, wow.
I know, right? To be near family, because, you know, my pops had kind of done his thing, and my mom's brother was just like, come down here and live near family. So, you know, so we did that. I was down there for like third, fourth, and fifth grade. So this album comes out, I think, what, 91's your senior year, right?
No, 91, I was in the Navy.
You were in the Navy already?
91, okay. I was in the Navy already. Yeah, okay, 91, yes. I was in the Navy.
Yeah, so 91, check this out. I was in fifth grade, bro. I was in fifth grade. And so just keep in mind, this is like how my mind is working at the time. Like 91, I always say 91 was significant for me because that's when, you know, I saw police beating up black people on TV. Like not like a TV show, but like for real. It was the first time I really, really vividly remember getting like racially profiled by the police, like out in public. Wow. I was with my mom, bro. Wow. You know what I'm saying? Like, but this is San Antonio, Texas. Like, gang culture is big out there.
Mm-hmm.
And third was this album because it really, really shaped and keep in mind. Like, I know this sounds crazy to say it now, but it really shaped and molded how I was really starting to see the world because it felt like somebody was talking right to me. You know, like saying stuff that I hadn't heard before that I was like, even at 10, I was like, I need to be hearing this. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know people don't think it's rap music or hip hop's responsibility to do that, but it kind of is because it's all about culture and cultures talk to each other. And what we say to each other is important.
So, and just a FYI, this album comes out after Chuck D's Hip Hop is the Black CNN.
Right. Yeah.
When he made that statement.
Like, yeah.
And then. Ice Cube predicts the LA uprising on this album, on Death Certificate.
It's all on here, bro. It's all on here.
And then, boom, a year later, boom, we have the LA uprising. So it's like
April 29th. Yeah.
Before we even get into this album, we have to put it into its context personally, you know, on a personal level. and also on a historic level. Like, you really can't take this album out and then just analyze it without the context. Really, one of, you can't. You right. can't. And remember, he's messing with Public Enemy, hardcore, you know, all that. Like, they're all in the same circle, and they're all like, they're discussing all this stuff. So,
it's not a coincidence that this album sounds like this.
Yeah, it's not a coincidence at all. It's not a coincidence. So we're gonna start with the Def Side. I know if you purchase it now, you can't really tell because it's streaming. Unless you buy the actual, they have the 25th anniversary of the vinyl.
Back then, like, doing stuff like this mattered because a lot of people had purchased their music on cassette. So
yes. You're right. It does matter. The sequencing. I know we talk about that a lot on here. Sequencing was important, like, for the way the albums to flow.
Yeah.
So just want to say that on this album, the production was done by Sir Jinx.
Right. Yeah. And Cube.
I think
DJ Pooh did some stuff on here too. But this is the first
Boogeyman. So okay. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is the first album away from the Bomb Squad.
Yeah, away from the Bomb Squad. You know, he ventured on his own. He was creating that street knowledge thing. Yep. He had Cam. He had the Lynch Mob.
He bought
WC into it, the Mad Circle. Like, he like was really like putting this group together. So we start off, right, which is. I mean, actually, really, around that time, there was a lot of black men who were being murdered.
Young black men.
You know, very young black men. And it was in the thousands. I remember, like, turning on the TV, and it was like, oh, Richmond, Virginia is number one. You know, New Orleans, Louisiana, number two. You know, Detroit, like Michigan, number three. You know, at 2,500 murders this year. And then, you know, New York City, number five. Chicago, number six. Yeah.
It seemed like cats were in competition for murder rate supremacy. Which is very sad.
Very, very sad. And it was so the funeral intro kind of, he touches on that.
Right.
You know.
He was a good brother. Didn't get into an excessive amount of trouble. You know what I mean? But it's one thing. It's one thing. Yeah, man.
So
it goes right into the first song.
Yeah. The wrong nigga to fuck with is Ice Cube. It's like Ice Cube, you know, NWA Ice Cube. This is that
very,
guy.
Very much so. The attitude and everything, and I thought it was a cool use of the James Brown, the Big Payback sample, because you got to realize a lot of people would use it after this.
But
the way this one was used, I was like, man, this is just a buckshot out of a shotgun, man. This joint hits you in your chest.
And just to say, a lot of the production here is West Coast. It is definitely like,
yeah, for sure, a lot of
West Coast. And but the way that Sir Jinx and the Boogeyman used it. Really separated them from everybody else. So
yeah,
really separated them from DJ Quick, from Dr. Dre. Like, it really, right, like the right, way he right. used it. And I think with Ice Cube, I think what he was really trying to put himself forward as, look, I actually could write rhymes. Like, I'm a lyricist. Like, I could fucking write. You know what I mean?
And I think that's what this a piece of this first song was about. Because I always thought, like, you know, when he says I'm the wrong nigga to fuck with, he's talking to rappers in the rap game.
Exactly.
Which is why he says, this ain't no pop, because that sucks. Yep. You can New Jack Swing on my nuts.
My nuts, yeah.
like he's talking to rappers. He's also talking to dudes in the street.
Yep.
And of course, at the end, he's talking about the police. Like, you know, don't let me catch Daryl Gates in traffic. I got a habit to pill his cap backwards. Like,
it's funny because I had to tell myself who Daryl Gates was. I was like, he was chief of police at that time in L.A. And LAPD was like one of the worst, still is to this day. Yeah. Police departments in the country,
Mr. Battering Ram himself.
Yes. So I appreciated that he was like, you know, he mentions Darryl Gates by name.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So like, yep. Then we get into My Summer Vacation, which again, he used the storytelling again.
This is him at his best with the storytelling, for real, man.
Exactly. Which is typical ghetto USA. Like, this is your summer vacation. Like, you know, like, this is, and I thought the storytelling was great. You know, and again, Ice Cube really sets himself apart from his peers on the West Coast, because like I could write rhymes, I could tell stories, you know what I mean? Whatever you need me to do,
stories too, because there's a beginning, middle, and end here. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
You know, you understand the mentality of the dude that's like, yo, the spot's getting hot where I'm at, so let's go somewhere else. In this case, it's to go to St. Louis. set up shop, start slanging. Dudes around the way don't like that. it causes trouble, some friction. The cops come in, but you know, arrest them. All this other stuff, and I'm just like, yo, this is like, you can see all that. I've always wondered why hasn't Cube made this movie yet? this song right here, it's an entire motion picture. But
and again, foreshadows. But go ahead.
Yeah, but then again, I think of, do you watch Snowfall at all?
I've watched like the first season.
Yeah. Okay, so if you're caught up to season four, I believe this happens. Mm. Except they go to Little Rock. They go to Little Rock, Arkansas, I believe. Yeah, the main character's uncle and his aunt, they go to Little Rock, Arkansas. They're clearly selling crack. You know what I'm saying? Due to the time period. And they're setting up shop over there because, you know, what do you say? Damn, making triple the price than I did in Missouri. Something like that. Like, you know, like you can sell it for a larger price because the drug hasn't really made its way out there yet.
Exactly. And they don't have any suppliers. Yeah. Yep.
Right. So, yeah, man. Like, I always thought of this song as just a straight movie, just beginning, middle, and end. Like, you know,
but that's how a lot of like the Bloods and Crips spread across the country, right?
Right, yeah.
You said somebody from a particular set moved to a particular area and set up shop, and like that's how it spread. So again, Ice Cube, you know, storytelling, you know, foreshadowing, all this stuff, like doing it very early,
yeah.
You know, in his career, you know.
Yeah. And the George Clinton Atomic Dog was pretty dope, yes. too. Slowed down. I was like, oh, man.
Yeah, again, it really set himself apart from everybody else. Because a lot of people were sampling this stuff back then.
You know?
And I know that George Clinton was someone who was very open about, yeah, you can sample my shit. You know, like, let's talk.
Right.
You know. Steady Mobbin', which I consider the top 25 best hip-hop songs of all time. Like,
I love this joint.
You can play this shit any fucking time. And it's just like, oh, this shit is dope. Like, you know, like, I, you know, it's just like, but and I just feel like it's such a West Coast, you know.
Yo, very much so. I gotta tell like a quick personal anecdote real quick. So, anytime anybody asks me that question, that when did you fall in love with hip hop moment, or when did you know that you wanted to be an MC?
Mm-hmm.
I always reference this, not necessarily just this song, but this video.
Yeah.
So, like I said, we were living in Texas, and this is I'll never forget. My mom calls me one day. I'm at the house. I think I'm like, it's like summertime. And she's like, turn on the TV. And we have cable.
Okay, wow. Wow.
You know what I'm saying? So I'm geeking. Like, this is like TV overload at this point. Cause you know, I got so many channels. The picture's is clear. And I remember Rhapsody when, who was the mayor of Rhapsody?
The mayor?
Yeah, the mayor of Rhapsody.
Yeah, the mayor.
Chris Thomas. I forgot his name. Was his name Chris Thomas?
I want to say it was a regular name. I want to say it was like a regular name.
Yeah, I think his name was Chris Thomas. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the mayor of Rhapsody. And I remember seeing this video, because you got to realize up to this point, rap music is just Kid and Play, yeah. MC Hammer, Heavy D and the Boys. It's very, to me, I really don't even really necessarily all the way know what rap music is at this point. I just I know there's music my mom plays, the gospel stuff, and then there's the other stuff that she plays when it's not gospel. You know what I'm saying? But as far as like identifying what rap is, I really don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I see this video, and everything he's saying is happening on the screen. And it blows my mind. I'm 10. You know what I'm saying? And it blows my mind, you know. Or the green guys, and I might start slinging bean pies, and you see the NOI brother on the corner selling bean pies, or the bootleg T-shirt of the month with "you can't touch this" on the front, and then you see a brother selling T-shirts that say "you can't touch this." Even for something as simple as went to mom's house and dropped a load in the bathroom, there's a video, a quick shot of him sitting on the toilet taking his shit. I'm like, keep in mind, like when I saw this, bro, I was like, I want to do this. Like, I want to rhyme like this.
I mean, I know you told me that Ice Cube had a big influence on you, but I didn't know this was the turning point.
This was the moment. This was the moment, though. I was like, I want to do this. And like ever since then, like Ice Cube's been my guy. So when I walk in the barbershop or go in other places where people just don't know, and I say Ice Cube's my favorite MC, they don't get it because they're my age and all they know is, are we there yet? You know what I'm saying? But I'm like, y'all showed up late to class and never did your homework.
It was your homework, yeah.
You know, so Steady Mobbin', like you said, it's a very West Coast joint. But to me, like the rhyme, the fact that everything he was saying, you could see it, just was just just so impactful for me. And I and another side note, I always thought this song was a precursor to "It Was a Good Day." Like this was like this was like the day before "It Was a Good Day." You know what I mean?
That makes sense. Not, it makes sense because you look at the video. It makes makes sense. Like, yeah, it's like one movie we together.
Yeah,
you know. So yeah, yep. But man, I love the song. I love the song.
Yeah, yeah, man. You can just let it bump, man.
Yep. So you know they do the Robin Lynch interlude, and Robert Leach was an iconic figure in the '80s.
Oh yeah, man.
The lifestyles of the rich and famous.
Champagne wishes and caviar dreams. And that's what he said, right?
Yeah. It's funny because I was telling my kids about it. I was like, you know, like, so he was like, whose house did he go to? And I was like, he would go to these houses. They'd be empty.
He never said who, right?
Yeah, he never said who. He never said, oh, this is so-and-so, you know, and he just pull up and he would show you shit. And he was like, he was doing that. And I was like, yeah, it was just like, people watched it. It had like 20 seasons and shit. Like,
it ran for a nice little minute, bro.
Yeah.
But this is back when the sketch or the interlude skits were, I don't know, that they were very essential to your album. I always think about when it comes to this particular year, I think about this album and De La Soul Is Dead.
De La Soul Is Dead, yeah. Yep.
I just like, yo, man, the skits were just on point. And this was a good example of it. I thought it was funny, like, you know, Robin Lynch, he's going through the hood.
Yeah.
You can see our strawberry showgirls. Hey, how much? Like, I'm sorry. It's very humorous because I think about like Ice Cube is what, like 2021 at this time. So
yeah,
it sounds like the type of stuff that you make when you're that age. You
exactly.
Know what I'm saying?
Exactly. And it made the album cut. So like yeah. So
yeah.
Then of course the Giving Up the Nappy Dugout, which is funny because my wife was like, I remember that song. Very vividly. I didn't know you was into Cube like that. She's like, yeah, I remember that song very vividly. And let me just say this, like, with the exception of Yo-Yo, really, everybody in NWA is able to women, you know?
Not at all.
So listen,
I'm sorry, keep going.
No, because I was going to say that I remember, like, when I copped the album, I was like, you know, Cube got Knowledge Itself. I was like, yo, Cube got Knowledge Itself. And I remember that I dated at the time was like, no, he did not. And I was like, well, you know,
right.
Giving Up the Nappy Dugout, come on, bro. And I was just like, yo, chill. Like, that's the death side, the life side. He don't get down like that.
Yeah, I was about to get into it because this song here, but I thought there's a few songs on this album that do that. And I think this song is one of them.
Yeah.
There's the cause and the effect. Because if you look at this song, which is Giving Up the Nappy Dugout, granted, yeah, you say they're not favorable towards women because this song and the next song after it does they all point the blame towards the woman,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't never put any of the responsibility or accountability on the male because clearly Giving Up the nappy dugout is about promiscuous women in the hood that sleep with all everybody, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, okay, well, what about the guys that are saying yes too? You know what I'm saying? Like they're just as promiscuous and for lack of if I guess you want to use the word. The filthy or whole like whatever as these particular women that you're talking about, you know what I'm saying? But yeah, I feel what you're saying when you're saying they're not favorable towards men and women because they're always, like I said, you point the finger at and talking about and not necessarily the most flattering way to the women. Like I think about the second side of the NWA second album, Jesus Christ. Oof. Like the first like 5-6 songs. It's hard to sit through now. I'm gonna be honest, man. Like it's hard to sit through.
No, for me it was hard to sit. Again, I wasn't a fan of NWA back then. Like I was not a fan, and that was one of the reasons why. That was like one of the reasons why.
Yeah.
You know, the production was dope, but I was like, I'm not a fan. I'm not into that. Yeah, so man, like, you know, I took a chance with Cube, and I was just like, oh shit! I never figured the sister was like, nah, he don't like women. And I was I used to be like, nah, he like women. He like, nah, he don't like women.
I get why she would say that, but to me, like this song is the cause, and the next song is the
effect.
Look
Who's Burning, yeah. Look Who's Burning is the effect. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you are a woman out here doing all of that, then yeah, you know the sexual partners that you have will probably be in the clinic. You know what I'm saying?
So and that's the Look Who's Burning talks about.
Right. He's talking about the spread of STDs throughout the Black community, basically. Always the one line that always stuck out to me. I'm sorry, this sounds so terrible. To bend that big ass over and take the shot. he's talking about getting a shot of penicillin in your ass.
Yep. Very thin. But let me say this about Look Who's Burning.
Mm.
If you have a weak stomach, you might not want to listen to that song. So like,
right? Yeah, he gets real detailed,
very vivid. But that's how that's his style. But his style is very vivid, very vivid.
Yeah. But like I said, the one thing that he got wrong that a lot of us, or a lot of people got wrong, especially back then when, of course, like, you know, AIDS and HIV awareness was really on the rise, is the fact that, you know, males are the carriers of most of these things that are that are spreading around. And he's sitting here pointing the finger at the women. And as a grown adult now listening to it, I'm just like, oh, man, you got that wrong, brother.
Yeah.
But STDs spreading in the Black community, period, is still like something that needed to be touched on. And I'm glad, and for what it's worth, I'm glad he talked about it. Mm-hmm. You know, so.
Bird in the Hand, which I forgot was on this album. Like, I, for some reason, I thought it was at America's Most Wanted, but it's on this one, and I was like, oh shit.
This one of his best joints right here, man.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
it's very much the sell drugs, not because I want to, because I have to.
Because I And again, storytelling at his finest. It makes sense why he writes movies.
Yeah,
it's just like, you're like, oh, this shit just like. And it's funny because I tell my students that I'm like, if you could write rhymes, you can write, you know, stories. You could write deep. They're decent. Mm-hmm. You can write stories, and this is the best example of, you know, even the song that I was like, I don't know, Cube. I kind of like got the picture in my head of what he was talking about.
So, yeah, fresh out of school because I was a high school grad. Had to get a job because I was a high school dad. Like, that already sets the tone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you already know what this character has to. His mind state and what his goal is. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Now I gotta punch the clock at a slave, still be half a man, something, something. What do you say? Welcome to McDonald's, man. Take your order, please. Gotta sell your food that might give you cancer. Like, but he's just like, nah, fuck that. I can't support my family with this.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? So I caught me a bird, better known as a kilo. Like, yeah, man, I love it. And I love the shout out to Cube for the most gangster TV sample before this in the history of ever, the Big Bird from Sesame Street. Yeah. It's like, say, I was searching through my nest and found a book of my poetry. I'm like, which was cool, man. Like, nobody was doing stuff like that, man. It was all about standing out, being unique, man.
Mm-hmm.
The beat is one of the hardest beats to rhyme over as well, man. I love that track.
So then we go into Man's Best Friend,
right? Oh yeah,
again.
It used to be a dog named Lassie, but now in 91, it's a gun. If you ask me, like,
yep,
yeah, man.
Which, you know, like, I listen to this song because a lot of they age very well, and this one like aged very well, and when I this song, I think about like Organized Confusion's one about the gun.
The gun.
Then Nas's joint.
I Gave You Power.
Like, I think when I think of Man's Best Friend, I think of those two. And I remember when Organized Confusion did their song, I was automatically reminded of Man's Best Friend. And I was like, oh, like, they just took it a step further, you know.
Right.
But this is kind of like, it comes from the same vein of I can't emphasize this enough. If you could write really dope rhymes, you can actually write, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Like, this joint is another one of those ones where a cause and effect as well, because he's talking about, you know, Man's Best Friend is a gat, a gun, as it were, you know what I'm saying, particularly to Black men in the environment that he grows up in. You know what I'm saying? Guns are my best friend for said reasons that he explains in the record. And when you get to the next song, Alive on Arrival, you see the result of that. When you got a bunch of people, when you got a bunch of people out here with guns and nothing to do and nothing but a bunch of ego and attitude, people get shot.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I know it sounds very, you know, very direct or very obvious, but yeah, people gonna get shot. If you got a bunch of people out here with no guidance, no direction, no whatever, with guns, people are gonna get shot. People that aren't even out there looking for that trouble either. And that's what the record after it is about.
Yeah, Alive and Arrive, which I think is a great setup. I think, you know, and I know, again, we talked about this earlier, you know, sequel.
Yeah, man.
You know, we had the Death Side and the Life Side. So it's kind of like, he really sets you up. He really like, okay, it's a
movie.
He really sets you up. Like, right?
Yeah, the gun whole, violence, you know,
hospitals, poor medical like, healthcare, like all that shit.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I don't bang. I sing the good rhymes. Like, yo, like police are harassing him about like, he's like, police still want to know my gang affiliation. Like, yo, man, like I was just around and got shot. Like, why are you like, you're like, they handcuffing him to the hospital bed. Can't get in. Like you said, can't get any proper treatment.
And it's crazy that you say that because again, you know, Daryl Gates, his tutelage, they had the Ramparts division of the LAPD, and they're kind of like the ones that gangs, and they had this big gang database.
Oh, wow.
But you, if they had stopped you for whatever reason, they would take a picture. Be like, oh, we're going to, even if you're not affiliated,
right?
They would try to, they would put you in this gang database, you know?
Terrible, and, man.
It was wild. So a lot of them on that, you know, like, so it's kind of like, man, and then we get into the death, great Khalid Abdul-Muhammad.
He
died of an aneurysm.
Brain aneurysm, right?
Allegedly, you know, he was poisoned. That's the was out there. But I got the chance to meet him in Newport News. Like I met him. I met Muhammad in Newport News. I'll never forget it. And he had just started the Newport part. Like he had just jumped off.
He already left the nation.
Yeah, and
Because around this, I'm sorry. During this time right here, where his appearance on the album, he's still with the nation, right?
Yeah, he's the front man. He's the one that goes to speak on all the shows. He's the one that You know, he was the head guy. He was up in the front. He was kind of like almost like Malcolm. He was like the spokesperson. Like, yeah,
exactly. Yeah, man. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, rest in peace, Khalid Abdul-Muhammad, man.
True indeed.
Now, let me say this. Yeah, realize before this, I didn't know who he was.
Oh wow!
Like, do you understand what I'm saying? Think about that.
My introduction to him was I was on the West Coast, so like all the brothers used to play Khalid Mahomes.
Okay.
He was in Los. I want to say the Los Angeles Moms, and they would bring me his tapes, and we would play his tapes. So when I saw him, I was like, "Oh shit, that's Khalid Muhammad!" Like, well, that's the OG right there.
Word.
So it was like, yeah, but it's that, you know, you didn't know who he was. You were 10 years old.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Now I do. Now it's just like, okay, so what else does this guy talk about? Exactly. You understand what I'm saying? Like, and at that point, you know, during that phase of adolescence, I'm finding stuff. Cause I'm looking for it now. You know what I mean? And I know where it is that I need to kind of go in regards to, like, I know what it is that I like to hear now. I know what it is. I know, in regards to what's affecting the way I think.
Yeah.
In regards to being really fully aware of my blackness. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm seeking it all now.
And it's funny. Cause me and my partner, there was a time that if you lived in a particular part of the black community, you could always find the Nation of Islam. Right, you could always find a bean pie. You could they were around. They were a presence. You know, certain concerts you went to, they were security. Right,
right.
So like, if someone was to learn who's this Khalid Abdul-Muhammad guy, it wasn't hard for you. It really was not. You know what I mean? They were $5 each. You know, if anything, sometimes the brothers would, you know, if I bought like a final call bean pie, they would slide me a tape. You know what I'm saying? Like, they would look out. Like, they would, and I know that happened often, but they would slide a tape. And I know there was tapes that I borrowed and tapes that I loaned out with different people, and Khalid Muhammad was one of them.
Wow.
You know? So, you know, and the question that I posed to her was, you know, what happened? What happened to that? Like, what happened?
Yeah, man.
What it was. You know, there were some things that we thought about, like 911, but I was like, it's got to be more than just that. So,
you know. Got to be.
So then we flip over the tape, talking about cassette tapes.
Right. The life side.
The life side now. And the birth, again, with Khalid Muhammad.
Before Alpha, after Omega.
And there's this idea, you know, the Nation of Islam, the gods and earths also talk about this, how we're deaf, dumb, and blind, right? We're like walking zombies, and then we get knowledge of ourselves, and then we're born anew. We're new. Like, we got... And it's funny because the gods always say, you know, if you're a baby and you just got knowledge of self, so you're a baby. So it was kind of like that was kind of like the same idea. You know, we were dead. We were deaf, dumb, and blind, 85. And then we get knowledge of self,
It's definitely a kill the boy and let the man be born. You
know what exactly.
I'm like for real. And I think he says something kind of like that on this right here. Mm-hmm. The big thing that stuck out to me was didn't he say something before we can be the peacemaker, we must get rid of the peace breaker, something like that.
Something like that.
And I was just like, ooh, like I like the sound of that. Yeah, like I said, I'm 10, man. I'm like, you're like, yeah, that sounds like something we should be doing.
Wow.
like I said, this is in the music that I'm meditating on daily, bro. Mm-hmm. Like, and I just kind of, and I always hate to sound like the old dude, like, you know, back in my day, but like, you know, I hate to sound like that guy. I really don't want to be that guy, but there was just, yeah, I realized like the same time this was out, maybe I was listening to Cypress Hill too, right? Mm-hmm. Or De La Soul. Like I got a full balance no matter where it is that I went to when I went to go get my rap music, as it were, yeah. You know, because rap music was brand new still to me. You know, I was getting something different, you know, and I was getting, you know, stuff that fed me this way and some stuff that fed me that way. Like everything was, you know, something on the, what is it, the food pyramid, you know, everything had nutritional value, as it were. And I
agree with you. It's not, it's funny because I love the fact that my middle son's generation, they're going back to the 90s. Like, to them, they're like, the 90s was the shit. So they always, like, asking me questions. What you do? Oh, my God, what was you at when this happened? And it's like, this is nostalgia. Because I guess for them, like, when we was younger, everybody's trying to be, like, the 60s. I guess.
Right. True, indeed.
For them, that's their 60s. So, like, they have a lot of questions. And a lot of them actually have told me, like, y'all had a lot of variety. You know, yeah, like, y'all had a lot of variety that was played on the radio, that y'all go to the store. Whereas for them, they have to actually go look for shit. Like, they actually have to go look for it. So, yeah, we did have a variety. And that's always been my thing. My thing is...
Yeah, man. Give me some balance, man.
You know, I just did a show. Shout out to the Come Fly With Us podcast. I did a show with them on women in hip-hop. And I was like, you know, back in the day, we had a variety of women.
Yeah.
Different flavors. You know, now it's just you only get one thing on, you know,
you got one type out there.
You got one type. Everybody else, I got to dig up. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Like, people fail to realize, like... this was commercial. Ice Cube was signed to a major record
label. Yep.
Cypress Hill was signed to a major record label. De La Soul was signed to a major record label. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, this was commercial product.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
commercial
this
product.
This wasn't something that I had to go really look too hard to find. You know what I'm saying? Like, so
it was on the Billboard charts, all that stuff. It was
right.
He was very mainstream. It was very, very mainstream. Yep. So like, yep. He was doing all the news, all that stuff. Like, he was, you know, being on all the shows. I was just like, oh, wow. Like, you're right. All that stuff was mainstream. It wasn't like you had to, like, these people over there, like, yo, you know. So, yeah. And that's what the young people are telling me. They're like, oh, wow, y'all really have this variety, you know. So and they understand how certain artists that they listen to now, this where their influences came from. So, I think that's dope, too. Like, you know.
Okay. So, yeah, no doubt. Mm-hmm.
So this
where we at?
We're going to I Want to Kill Sam, which which was like, oh shit, like he went hard, like he went like military force. You know what I'm saying?
Bruh.
Yep, he went right. He was like, this is why, and it was just like, man, like
this song here, man. Like, you got to realize, like, I resisted so much not to join, like, because of records like this, and just, you know, a lot of stuff that a lot of older dudes were telling me, like, I really didn't want to do it.
Gotcha.
But you know, but you know, like I know, most people join the military not because of patriotism. It's mainly because economics.
I've talked to a lot of artists about this. I was like, hey, because they're like, oh, you was in the military, and I was like, yeah, and they was like, oh shit. And then when I talked to them, they're like, oh shit, I didn't think about it like that. Like, they was like, I never thought about it. I was like, yeah, the economics. We don't go in it because we want to kill motherfuckers. You know, it's the economics. For me, it was the quickest way out of the hood. It was like really quick way out of the hood. Like,
exactly.
No questions asked. I had to spend no money. They actually paid me. And it was, and I'm not trying to like say, oh, fuck you. I'm not trying to say, I'm just saying that it's a more nuanced argument, you know, to that discussion, you know, and the military is one of the biggest employees of black and brown people in the world, you know.
Right.
So yeah, we can go on and on. But yeah, it's still a dope song. Still a dope. He's not my uncle. Still a very dope song. And then we get into Horny Little Devil.
Little Devil, right. Which is, you know, I think these two songs are kind of connected too.
Exactly.
In a sense.
And he uses, you know, Elijah Muhammad's concept of, you know, calling the white man the devil.
Right. And that's At 10 years old, that's what I gathered at the end of this when the song was over. Yo. Like straight up. That if you ask me what that song was about, I was like, yo, the white man is the devil. Mm-hmm. Point blank, yep. Period.
Point blank, period. You know what I'm saying? Like, yep. And I like that. I like that he, you know, because, like, he could have easily went into, like, Lost Found Lessons, you know what I'm saying, and used that information. But he applied it to the hood shit.
Yeah.
Like, oh, wow. Like, you know what I'm saying? And I think that's why this album is so dope, because he takes all that information and he kind of, like, makes it his own.
Yeah. You know? Gives it the hip-hop modern twist, as it were, for that time. Versus being preachy, as one can say. Mm-hmm. Yeah, man.
And then we go into the song that brought him a lot of flack, a lot of controversy.
Yeah, buddy.
Black Korea.
Yeah.
Which it was a different time back then. And I think it's because a lot of people in our community agree with him, right?
And like I said, this was right. This was post Latasha Harlins too.
Yes. Very much so. Very, very much so. And I remember like a lot of black people defending this, like a lot of celebrities. Well, like, yeah, like, fuck, you know, like, you know,
that's how we feel.
Exactly. You know, whereas I feel like if it came out today, it'd be a different. It'd be different, you know, totally different.
Don't get me started.
You know, but I think it's because there are more of us who are kind of like more nuanced to, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, like, we're not doing Oppression Olympics. So, but back then, this shit, I remember this was very controversial. So it's kind of like, I would like to hear, like, you know, when, because I never heard, what's his name? He has that show about Koreans, influential in the hip hop community. I'm trying to remember his name, but I would like to hear his take on it, because he was listening to Death Certificate and all that shit, NWA back then.
I'm pretty sure it had to make him feel a certain kind of way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, let's not ignore that. You exactly. know what I'm saying? Like, because I don't know what it's like to be Korean, I have no idea. You know, but, you know, I do know what it's like to be black. I do know what it's like to be profiled by everybody. Yes, by everybody. Yes. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And in this case, it's particularly people that work at the convenience store down the street, you know, down the street from where you stay at.
Yep.
Now, like I said, coming post Latasha Harlins, who was what? She got shot in the back, right?
Yeah,
in the back, yep. In the back, yeah, over some goddamn orange juice.
Orange juice, yep.
Like, get out of here. Yep. And the sadder part is, it's like, you know what? The lady was found guilty, but then she got parole or probation.
Yeah, probation. She didn't even get. Yeah, she got probation. Yeah.
From what I understand, I think like the minimum sentence was supposed to be like 16 years. Like 16 that was years, supposed, yep. Yeah, supposed to be the minimum sentence.
Yeah,
and that's so. Yeah, I'm sorry if anybody's feelings are hurt. You gotta understand the rage behind this record.
Truly, you know I agree 100%. The context, you gotta look at the context. What was going on? Yeah. You know, we see it in movies, Menace to Society. They kind of get into it there.
Right. There you go.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, yeah, it was people they felt touched, that way. People
yeah, they touched, really they, felt they touched on that in that movie with the first damn scene.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. So, all
right. Then we go into True to the Game.
This is my joint right here.
Yeah. This is the joint right here. Like, man, like, bruh. So it's kind of like, yep.
I think this, there were only two singles. It was Steady Mobbin' and this, right? I believe, because there's a video for this.
There is a video for this.
Yeah, it's got DJ Pooh dancing in the sequence, like,
yep.
like MC Hammer. And yeah, to realize at the time, like, I'm still trying to wrap my head around this. It's like, you know, I'm 10, so I'm like, yo, why are they dissing Hammer? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, what's like, like what's, yo, Hammer's still cool to me. You know what I mean?
But
like,
I think this was when he did that popcorn chicken commercial.
Oh, the Taco Bell joint.
Was it Kentucky Fried Chicken?
No, it was Taco Bell. I remember he had.
Oh wow.
He had the parachute pants. He was flying down. He biting in burritos and shit. Or
no,
something crazy.
He did a popcorn chicken. They was promoting their popcorn chicken. I want to say it was KFC.
Nah,
it might have been chicken. And he was dancing in the commercial, and he threw the popcorn chicken in the hand, and he spun, and he ate it. You know what I mean? And he caught a lot. A flag for that shit, and this is kind of like
it was that in the Pepsi joint. Now that's proper because I remember Q-Tip dissed him too.
Yeah, Q-Tip. So like, but that was, you know, he was seen as a coon because of those moves that he was making. Particular move,
those moves were unheard of at the time. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, hip hop wasn't doing it.
Hip hop wasn't doing that shit. Yeah, hip hop was not. And it's funny because you, I don't remember if this was when Sprite was doing those. No, it was later on. Sprite did those hip hop commercials.
Sprite always been doing hip hop commercials.
They were like,
though.
And but they were like really dope. They were like, they had like Poobah. They had like,
oh, like, no, where Brand New Bean was in the studio.
Yeah, like that, like freestyling. Those, like, if you're gonna do it like that. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's what the response was like. If you're gonna do it like that, but that came after the fact. But I know that, like, I know that, like, he, you know, Hammer did those commercials. And he was like bringing that stuff up, not just with Hammer, but with other people that were kind of like they were considered cooning back then.
Yeah, you was hardcore hip hop. Look at yourself, fool! You done flip flop, giving our music out to the mainstream. Don't you know they ain't down with the team? Like I love that record, but like I said, as a kid at the time, I just didn't get it. Like, yo, like what? Like that? This and like when Third Base went in on Hammer too. It's just like, yo, why? They, what? Like, what the fuck is going on? Like, I love Hammer. Like, you know what I'm saying? like, I don't get it. Like, what's wrong with it? Like? But yo, like this record is definitely a warning to, you know, a warning to the sellouts, man. The people that are in the culture, that are culture vultures, that want to just get money off of this art and this thing that we created. It's definitely a diss to them. And there's a lot of people in the industry like that right now. They don't care about hip hop. They don't care about rap music. They don't care about the art. They don't care about nothing. They just care about what it can do for them. Mm-hmm. And that's ultimately what this record is about. So and I don't think that's what MC Hammer was. I know Hammer cared about the art.
He cared about the dance.
So I don't know. So if Ice Cube, if you ever hear this, I don't know if you've ever spoken to MC Hammer recently, but you owe that brother an apology, man. Like, you know what I'm saying?
I think because I was an anti-Hammer guy. You know what I mean?
I get it. I'm thinking about like the age you were at though, bro. Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
I personally feel like Hammer caught a lot of flack for a lot of shit that wasn't really his fault. Like, I really. Right. Like, you know, you have a scapegoat. He got scapegoated in a lot of shit. And I don't think it's his fault. I really don't think it was his fault. No. I think he was feeding a lot of people.
Right. You know what I mean? He was doing it for one for him, of course. Then one for his peoples, his hood.
Yep. He literally employed
He loved Oakland. Like for real, bro.
He employed a lot of motherfuckers, and he was trying to, like, make those payrolls, you know what I'm saying?
He made a lot of
business decisions that may have not been wise in hindsight, but he caught a lot of flack for that shit.
Mr. All you motherfuckers owe Hammer an apology for real, yeah,
so,
word up.
So and you know, it goes for one of those things where I wasn't a fan of his music. I'm not his demo, you know.
I got you. But yeah, because back then I was just like a little kid that liked to dance. Yeah. You know what I mean? So like, yeah, if you got like 8-bar verses and 16-bar hooks. Like, that gives me enough space to dance. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, that was his thing too.
I kind of felt like he ruined hip hop dance.
You think so?
I kind of feel that way. I kind of feel like, because he was like the first artist to have shit like fully choreographed.
You know what I'm saying? I see what you're saying. Like, so on some Janet Jackson shit.
We come from improvisation.
Freestyle.
So you had a 10 Thieves and all of them. So I always kind of felt like, damn, because I remember being in California, and I remember like certain his songs would come on, and then like everybody would come on to the dance floor, and everybody do the same fucking moves. And I was just like, yo, what the fuck? Like, you know, so, you know, but that's neither here nor there. Colorblind is the posse cut.
Word.
With I was a fan of Cam back then.
Cam was the man.
WC is on this shit, and King T.
King T.
Which I feel like he never gets his props. He never gets his roses,
bro. Like,
you know what I mean? Like, King T. If you're thinking about West Coast hip hop, King T. should be
in the
somebody
top.
You mentioned,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Definitely in your top five, top ten, something, man. He's got to be in that top list, man. This is a good one, though. It's a dope
ass fucking posse cut.
You know, I mean, it's a posse cut with a serious topic too, which is very, very rare. You know, most posse cuts are like, you know, I'm dope. And
I'm dope. I'm dope.
And here's my man who's dope. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I'm dope too, yo.
yeah. But they're talking about like, you know, Bloods and Crips and, you know, gang neutrality and all that other stuff. And I'm just like, yo, like I said, this is me figuring out maybe why that cop fucked with me. You know what I'm saying? Like, you gotta realize, like I know, but I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like,
at 10, yeah.
I'm 10, bro. Like, all I know is I got these. They were like, were they LA Gears? What the fuck were they, man? Goes to show you how long ago it was. Were they LA Gears? I don't know. They were like LA Gears, but they had like the Raiders logo on them.
Oh, okay. So
I thought I was. You gotta realize they were that on. I'll never forget this, bro. I think I had a black jeans, black shirt, and a Raiders hat, bro. Yeah, realize I this is what I want to look like because this is what I'm seeing now. You know what I mean? And dude just would not stop sweating me, man. Like it was. It didn't make me feel good, bro. Like it did not make me feel good at all. Cause like it was just like, you know, I was in the mall with my mom and my mom went to a store that I clearly didn't want to go into. So I was just hanging out.
Yeah.
And waiting for my mom. And you realize like, you know, I think he eases up once he sees my mom walking back. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
Cause wow. I think he finally realizes I'm not out here stealing shit or causing trouble. Mm-hmm. Like, yo, son, I'm waiting for my mom.
Damn.
Like, give me a fucking break, B. Black cop.
Wow.
You'll never forget that.
Wow.
Yeah, man.
Thanks for sharing. That's
for sure, man.
You were 10 years old, bro.
Yeah, that's our norm though. Every one of us has a story
true
like
indeed.
That though.
True indeed.
Fortunately.
True indeed. But my point is that you were so young and that shit has a strong impression for the rest of your life. Like you're 10. I can see, I'm not saying that it's right. I can see if you was 25. You know,
right.
You kind of have the mental capacities to kind of like deal with it.
Right. You know yeah. At 10, nah.
But at 10, nah, you don't. And this, and you know, this is your introduction to that shit. And that shit, it shouldn't be that way, you know?
Yeah, man.
Which goes into the next joint, Doing Dumb Shit, which.
This is a good record, man.
I love this song because I always point out to my peers, like, stop saying that the kids are wild because he was doing the same
you
shit
was doing...
too. You know what
exactly,
I'm saying? Like,
exactly. Yeah.
He was doing the same wild shit. I don't, you know, like, I don't. Begrudge my students. I don't be like, oh, you know, I'd be like, hey, let me holler at you though, for real. Like, I feel you, you know, but
yeah,
you know,
yeah, I love this Parliament sample too, man.
Yeah, I use it. Yeah, yeah.
yeah. But he's talking about being 10, 13, and 17. Like, and those are when I'm thinking about it, like, those are really, you know, for a young man, especially a young black man, those are important ages, man.
And very important. I believe, which is why this is why, you know, I want to teach middle school and high school. This is why, because if we're impressionable.
Yeah, very
you know,
much
what
so.
what we experience is going to really change our trajectory, you know.
Yeah.
If we don't like school, whether, you know, there's certain things we're not gonna enjoy or we're gonna, you know, feel comfortable with this. Like really that shit really happens in those years. So I always refer to this song and be like, yo, bro, we was out there bugging too. So don't act like we wasn't. I'm not saying it's right.
Yeah, he's talking about being 10, cutting class and chasing ass.
Yep.
And then by 13, you know, he's losing his virginity.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yep. Not knowing what to do. thinking that this bitch broke my dick. Because <Yeah. laughs> I was young doing dumb shit. And then from being 17 years old, running the streets and then realizing, you know, I can't do this. He starts rhyming.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, I think it's, I don't know. I thought this was kind of a brilliant progression, a good, nice little coming of age tale. Because, yeah. Like you said, like you know, it ain't just the ones behind you that are doing this wild shit. It was you too. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
Like for real.
Us reminded me of his politics. Like I was like, yeah, he's always been like this. Like his politics has always been like this. Has always been his politics. There's nothing new here. You know what I'm saying? Like
he's very much stating a lot of the obvious
mm-hmm.
in this song. But the one thing that always stood out to me was the little skit before it with the little kid. He's like, man, he's like, yeah, forget all that, man. When I get 14, man, I'm going to get... But he said, think about this. So think about how old this kid is. So mm-hmm. when I get 14, he's saying when I turn 14, I'm just trying to make it to 14. Because when I'm 14, maybe I could be the man. I'm going to get me a ragtop trade, gold Dayton's, fat ass finger rings, gold link, something, and a big booty bitch to go with it. And I'm just like...
It sounds familiar.
It sounds
very familiar. You know, it's like it's so
a lot of kids.
It's like a lot of kids feel that way. I had this discussion with my students the other day about gun violence, and we talked about it. And in the last, I said some things. So I'm like, you know, I shouldn't have said that. You know what I'm saying? And because their thing was, we talked about life insurance. You know what I mean? And they was like, oh, you got life insurance? And I was like, yeah. It's you know, I want to make sure that my folks is good.
You should
happen to me. You know. But they're like, oh, so if you get murdered tomorrow, your folks are good. And I was like, yeah, so that's how it should be. And I was like, oh, wait a second. Like, wait, let's talk about that, you know. But mm-hmm. in their mind, their reality is this might happen to me. You know, this their mm-hmm. reality. Like, I might get murdered. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's part
Damn.
Of the reality. And it's kind of like, oh, I should have like changed this. I should have like really talked about, not changed the subject, but I should have been like, oh, we need, that's not your reality. We need to change that. Like,
this is how we can do it, you know? You still got a future. You still got life to live. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. A line that stuck out to me to join Cuba said, and all your dope dealers, you're just as bad as the police because you kill us.
I was like, man,
I feel that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, because that's like, that's real. That's giving you, you got to realize, like, up until this song, he's giving you a few aspects of the drug dealer. You know what I'm saying? And the actual situation that the drug dealer is in, whether it's My Summer Vacation or Bird in the Hand, mm-hmm. to this line right here, man. Like, it's giving you the good, the bad, but actually, not, there's no good. But, like, you know, he's giving you all sides of it. And that's something that's, you know, sometimes missing when a lot of people want to do the drug talk. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
A lot of them just want to let you know that they can sell copious amounts of narcotics and be rich.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I'm just like,
and mathematically break it down in so many different ways, right? Like, yeah. So yeah, this leads us to the track that we kind of alluded to earlier, No Vaseline, the diss to N.W.A., considered one of the top 10 disses of all time. Like, if there was
let me say this record, not even 10, bro, at least 3.
Oh, okay.
I'll go ahead and I'll raise you top 10. I say top 3.
Okay. I do not disagree with you on that. Like, I'm
thinking about just beat, lyrics, and I'm thinking about impact. I think about what happened after this record dropped. NWA broke up. NWA was no more after this.
Yes.
Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, think about the impact of this actual diss record versus the impact of other diss records. Mm-hmm. Maybe other diss records led to other retorts, but nah. After this shit, it was over. Like, literally, your career as a group is done.
It's done. Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So,
no, you're right. They broke up right afterward. You know what I'm saying? Like, Dre left, went to Death Row.
Yeah.
And after that, it just wasn't, you know.
It wasn't the same.
It wasn't the same, and they, which is why they never responded. People be like, "Why did they respond?" I was like, "Because they actually like broke up." Like, you know,
there was nothing to say.
Broke up. It was just like they couldn't respond, it was wild. It was just wild. It was a dope song regardless. Like, it was a dope song because we knew who he was talking about. You know what I mean?
Right. He name dropped,
and then, you know, he referred to certain things that happened. You know, and he was just like, "Wow!" Like, you know, it was like, "Oh shit." So there's historical context as well. But yeah, I agree with you. Top three.
I'm glad y'all set it off.
You know,
it used to be hard. Now you just wet and soft. like, come on, man. Like, the line that always got me, what is this? Crap. I'm having a brain fart now. I'm sorry. Yeah,
and just the FYI, Drake. Cube called flack for this, you know what I'm saying? Because of what he said about Jerry Heller. Like, you know, he called flack for that. Because
you let a Jew break up my crew?
Yeah.
Like, come on, son. Where's the lie? That's all I'm going to say.
No, I'm just saying that it's factually correct, you know what I'm saying? But he caught a lot of flack, you know, for that particular line. Dope song, like, well, again, one of the top three disses. I'm gonna throw it up there.
We could debate about what the other two are, but this one's definitely got to be in there. I saw it coming, that's why I went solo and kept on stomping while y'all motherfuckers moved straight out of Compton. I was like, come on, man,
I remember this like. At the barbershop, we talked about this song ad nauseum. Like, just talked about it.
When it came out?
When it came out. And it was just like, we cast like, oh, shit. Like, y'all, they're not going to respond. Like, it was wild. Like, you know, like, wow. Like, just again, we got to put it into context.
It was three hard verses, man. Like,
yeah, yep.
It was personal. It was poignant. It was powerful. it's everything that a true diss record should be. I don't think you should just be out here if this is the route you want to go as an MC and as an artist. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think you should just be out here calling motherfuckers out just because, you know, you think or maybe you heard. Nah, it should actually mean something, man.
But this, my thing is that because I always hated subliminal disses. I always hated that shit. Yeah, I was always like, call the motherfucker out.
Say, yo.
Call, say it with your chest. Like, and this is a song where, like, if you're going to do it with this record,
yeah, listen to this shit. Kumo would call out LL. LL would call out Kumo.
Yeah, like listen come to this on, man. Yeah, like listen to this shit. There's no, you know, we're talking about like, oh wow, like oh wow, they know, the, you know, like you know. So yep,
look at the bridge is over, man. KRS is talking about the entire Juice Group.
Juice Group, yep, yeah. Like, so
like
yep,
drop, you know, drops names and everything, man. Like I thought this was kind of a, you know, in retrospect, this is a cool way to end the album. Like
it was, like, it was a, like yep, yep.
Like yep. Of all type of songs to end it with, like you know, it's got everything except the girl song on here. Like you know what I'm saying? Like if you like look at like what hip hop, you know the stereotype. I hate to say stereotypical,
the tropes.
Yeah. You know, it's got everything except the girl song, but you know everything else is on here. You know what I mean?
I'm glad you said that because it's one of those things where if we were sequencing the album, there is no way that this would not have been the last song.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you what comes, I mean? What like, comes like, after this?
You know, because if they had put it like in the middle of the Death Side, or it was still a dope song, but I just sequencing like this is the perfect way. Like it's just like, you know, because I think like each song is like dope, and it's just like, oh man, it can't get any better than this. And then boom, no Vaseline. It's just like, bruh, yeah. Like it, you
it's
know,
it's like he addressed everything he wanted to address, and he's like, well. And now on a personal note,
let me
get this off my chest before I get the fuck up out of here.
Since I have you here already, you
right, know, like, right, yeah. Right. Yeah, since I have your attention, let me say this, because you got like, what was it on the Niggas for Life album, man? They went in on him, man. Like
they did.
Like,
yeah.
I'm like with the skits and I forget what the name of the song was, but they really went on him. Like ah man, I'd have to go back and listen to it, but it totally uncalled for, bro. Totally uncalled for, and they should have known. Like hey man, like. Yo, Cube was a head writer of the group. You didn't think he was just not gonna say something, not gonna do something.
He was a head writer, yeah.
Dude's running with Public Enemy. You think nothing's gonna happen? Yep. They clearly weren't ready for it. And that's hey man, the group disbanded and were never heard of again.
And clearly, he was the strongest one out of the group. Like clearly, like
hands down,
clearly
man.
hands down. Like he was it's,
no contest, man. No contest at all. I mean, well, excuse me. It sounds like I'm shitting on everybody else because I love Ren.
Yeah, Ren is dope. And not taking any. When I say that, I don't mean that everybody else tried. I'm just saying that it's clear that he was a strong one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Ren was dope too.
Yeah, I love MC Ren. I think. Yeah, I think he really held it down on that second album, like for real. When I go back and listen to it,
yeah,
he held it down. But Cube was clearly missing.
Mm-hmm.
He was clearly missing, yep. and I think Cube's ideas were clearly missing from that album
exactly.
too. Which is why that second side of that tape sounds that way. I'm like, yo, this is nothing but like porn on wax. Like, what is going on here?
Yeah,
like,
they really moved away from rhyming and shit. Like, I feel you, 100%.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, salute to Ice Cube for this piece of dopeness, man. Like,
and just on a side note, Marvel had released a bunch of hip hop variant covers.
Oh, the Old Man Logan.
The Old Man Logan is the one they used for Death.
Oh, I got that one.
Yeah, I got that one. Yeah, I got that one. Yeah,
I got that. So, that was for the man. Who's Old Man Logan? When was that? That was a. What's my man name? Sarantino. Am I saying his name right?
Sarantino was the artist.
Yeah. Yo,
Andrea Sarantino.
Yo, I love it.
Andrea,
I love the way.
Fucking dope.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Oh
man.
My god, his
like, bro,
is fucking dope.
I love the illustrations on that one, bro.
Andrea Sarantino. Yup, he did that. He did the first six issues of that one, and he's just fucking anything he touches. I always pick up.
Yeah, definitely.
You know what I'm saying?
Definitely.
But the cover was it Andrea Sarantino for the cover?
I'm not sure. I just know that particular run, that's who did the drawing. You know what I mean? But yeah, the Old Man Logan, that number one with the death certificate cover.
Yep.
I was like, yo, this is too dope. Yeah. So shout out to them for that, man. Like
That's like my favorite. One of my favorite covers for the hip hop variants.
Oh yeah, definitely that one in and the Miles Morales Illmatic joint.
I got that shit too. Yeah.
Yep. I never got my hands on that one. Like I just couldn't find it. Couldn't find a copy. Still looking.
if I see it, I'll grab one. Like, yeah. So.
Oh yeah, for sure. Please.
Yeah, if I see it, I'll grab one. So like, yep.
Yeah, man, I'm glad we got a chance to talk about this, because I know people probably listen and think like all they do is talk about Wu-Tang. Like, you know what I'm saying? do these guys listen to anything else? It's like, nah, that means this album particularly, man, like it's on a lot of best of lists.
Yes,
period. It rightfully so, it belongs there. I think if you listen to rap music, period, there's no way I will allow you to engage in any discussion if you have never heard this.
I agree 100%. Yeah. And what I like is that there's a lot of, when I was bringing it up, a lot of people that aren't as into hip hop as we are know the album. You know, like, my partner knows the album. She's like, oh, I know the album.
Mm-hmm.
This album. She's like, oh, yeah, I know the album. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, there's a lot of people that are like, yeah, I had that joint. Yeah, I copped it. Like, yeah, that was my joint. Oh, this is my joint. And I was like, oh, wow. So, again, like you said earlier, it was mainstream.
This joint went platinum within like a few months.
A few months, yeah. Yep.
like for, it was released October, it was platinum before the year was up.
Yep.
That, which is crazy, because when you think of commercial rap in regards to like sonically, you know what I mean? Like, this isn't probably what most people are probably thinking about. You know, they're thinking about something that makes you dance, they're thinking about the girl song, whatever it might be. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not necessarily something that has such a powerful message as this in regards to Black people, the way we're living, the way we need to live. Like I said, it did everything it needed to do without being preachy. It was just it's a time capsule, man. Like, you need to, it's a time capsule that's relevant today still.
This group, because street knowledge, that's like the best way to describe.
Yeah, definitely.
Just what he was putting out at the time, not just death certificate, but the street knowledge. And I was just like, I like that. I like that. And that always personified what he was doing at the time. So Zemo, where can folks find you?
Oh, yeah, man. You know, Instagram, Twitter, Zemo757. I don't do much, but I'll be around. So.
Definitely. And you do features as well. You do features. And,
Definitely. I've been in the lab with Pete Twist, like, you know, the past few months, just cooking up some new stuff. You know, just... You know what I mean? Like, trying to get back into swing of things. And I was even asking Pete one day. I was like, yo, man, are there any young MCs coming through here that you working with? And that's a whole nother conversation, brother. like these young cats got my man wanting to quit. like for real, he's like, nobody's rhyming, unfortunately.
But all right, man, thanks again. Again, I gotta let the audience know that Zemo was the one that's been on me about this. I appreciate you, brother, and all the stuff that you bring to the show.
Oh, man. Appreciate you, man.
So, yeah, so it's dope. Another banger. So, peace out, everybody.
Groot.
There you have it. Another episode of Where My Killer Tape At. If you want to book your mans for a workshop, whether it's capoeira, breaking, or you want me to talk about hip-hop culture, or being a Black male feminist, hit me up on the website, omisbench.com, and bench is spelled BENCH.com. If you just want to hit me up on the Twitters, you know where I'm at. At DanTresOmi, DanTresOmi. And the official Twitter for the show is Omis Podcast. That's OMIS Podcast, right? You know, and if you want to continue the discussion, use the hashtag Where My Killer Tape At, killer spelled KILLA. Yo, do me a solid, man. Support the show. You can subscribe, you know what I mean, for 99 cents a month, man. You could do that. Or if you big money, you could do $5 a month. The link will be in the show notes. Or if you want to buy a present, or you a coffee snob like myself, you could always buy a coffee mug, man. I'm trying to reach 100 mugs sold for the year 2021. I'm only at 4. So please help a brother out. Word.